This week's topic is a bit controversial. If you'd like more info, check out the episode post on careerdayshow.com.
Okay, so I am Steve from New Jersey, and I am an organic chemist.
This is Steve, or at least that's what we're going to call him. It's true that he's an organic chemist, but we're not using his real name or his exact location, because when he leaves work, that's not who he is at all.
Yeah, it's a long story, but we'll just go with Steve in New Jersey is fine.
Steve in New Jersey told me that it sometimes feels like playing dress up to present this clean cut and professional appearance in the chemistry lab and yet be someone completely different after hours.
Actually, in the scene that I'm in, there's a lot of kind of gender bending in the clothing. You'll see even little things, like you'll see people who are biological males wearing dresses or lipstick or nail polish and things like that, which, you know, to us is totally normal, but to, you know, people not really exposed to it, they might find it odd.
At night, he's putting up mattresses all along the basement wall to attenuate the noise. He's coordinating people and arrivals, and it's not exactly something that he wants the police to know about. Who is Steve, and what does he do? All this and more coming up on Career Day. I'm Carissa Weiser. Welcome to Career Day. This is a podcast where I talk with complete strangers about life, identity, their sense of belonging, and of course, jobs. A lot of times, these elements are all intertwined. This week, I'm trying out a different format on the show. In past episodes, I've combined 3 to 4 interviews into a complete narrative. But in doing so, I end up having to cut out portions of some very interesting conversations and insight into who those people are. So today, I'm sharing Steve from New Jersey. He's an organic chemist, and after hours, he's a DIY basement venue operator and a musician.
In terms of right now, at least, I'm not focused on what I'm doing on my 9-to-5. I'm focused on what my 9-to-5 is allowing me to do and how it's allowing me to give back to my community and make other people's lives just a little better on a day-to-day basis.
I hate to say it, but I didn't know anything about the DIY community before this conversation. I didn't even know it existed. But that's kind of how it has to be in order to survive. DIY to me was a home improvement project that I did on my own. And while I feel like I know a lot more about it now after talking with Steve, I do realize that this is just one person's experience in that community. I'll be completely honest with you. This is not a scene that I'm familiar with. So to you, what is the DIY community?
Yeah.
Is it about the drugs and drinking and raging parties?
The reaction or the opinion of it is it's a bunch of degenerate youths engaging in, you know, doing illicit substances, getting very drunk, like being rowdy. It's not about that at all.
Steve says most of the people he encounters through his after-hours life felt like they didn't quite fit in anywhere else.
And maybe their clothing was too weird, or they listened to music that other people didn't like. Most of the people, through random happenstance or word of mouth, stumbled upon the DIY scene where there are people like them. And especially my house and the venue that I help run out of our basement and the other venues in my city, everybody's very, very focused on promoting safe spaces.
That's the key word right there. Safe spaces. It's freedom to be you without judgment.
So that people can come and not feel threatened because of their gender, their sexuality, their religion, or lack thereof. For me, it's all about coming together and appreciating music, creating a safe environment for everybody to interact. And also, specifically with my house, we try and use it as a vehicle for social activism.
That might be anything from fundraising for nonprofits in the community to organizing seminars with speakers and everything, all of which is really different than what I was expecting.
The DIY scene, that's the vehicle I've chosen in order to do that. And it has really given me fulfillment in my life in a way that, especially when I started working after college, I didn't think I was going to find, at least not for a decent amount of time.
Steve's story is another one where someone fell into their current field, in his case, chemistry. But when you look deeper, it doesn't look so random anymore. It looks like a great fit. It's so interesting when I do this because I can see how, even though maybe you're not as passionate about the chemistry portion of it, it fits in the story of who you are. And you wouldn't be able to have all of the rest of it without it.
Yeah, and it's kind of the way I fell into chemistry. It's a little window into how I've kind of always lived my life, because I've never really been super focused on one thing. I've always flitted around things I'm really interested in. I like photography, I like music, I like history, I like science, and, you know, I dabble in everything. I'm not really great in any one thing, so I started as a theater and creative writing double major, and then switched to science pretty much last minute my sophomore year, because I woke up one day and was terrified about being employed, because growing up, we didn't have a lot of money, so I was really worried about that. So I went to science and kind of fell into this job, and turns out I'm not bad at it. And who knows if that's what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I have no idea. But for now, it's enough that I'm doing well at my job, and it's giving me the financial stability to pursue other interests outside of work.
So I want to talk about the chemistry side, this day job part of your life first. In college, you switched to science. What did that look like? How did you end up in a chemistry lab?
I graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Biology and a minor in German, and then didn't really know what I wanted to do. Moved back in with my parents, and then maybe...
And about a month later, Steve's parents' neighbor's daughter, who's a higher-up in his current company, networked to get him an interview for a temp job.
And then 6 months later, I got hired full-time, and I've been there ever since, and that was about 3.5 years ago. So I kind of, it's not like I planned it. I just kind of fell into it.
Mm. Are you happy doing that?
Okay, yes and no. It's definitely not where I thought I would find myself, you know, especially studying environmental bio. I was really concerned with trying to save the planet, and then was kind of smacked with the harsh reality of the real world where everybody wants to try and save the planet. And so the jobs are few and far between, and they're very competitive, and so I needed a job to start paying off student loans, and I took the first thing that came my way.
I think when a lot of people think chemist, they think the lab coat, the test tubes, really sterile environment. Is that your reality at work?
Kind of. So in the lab, obviously you're working with chemicals that could potentially damage your clothing. As long as there's long pants and you have a lab coat on, you have closed-toed shoes, that's okay. Because I have the tattoos and the hair and the piercings, I actually tend to dress slightly more professional.
This says a couple things about Steve. One, he cares about working as a chemist. And two, he cares about working here, in this lab.
So whereas other people can wear a t-shirt in the summer as long as there's a lab coat over it, I always have a button-up on, lab coat, glasses, all the safety gear is required, and that's just through like OSHA regulations.
OSHA being the acronym for the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Depending on the chemicals you're working with, you need to have a certain level of protection on at all times in the lab.
That seems really driven by rules. You know, does that carry over into the mood of your work environment?
But with my company, everyone's very comfortable with each other, so we will talk with each other and we're friendly. But then when higher-ups in the company come through, a switch gets flipped, and it is very professional at that point.
Kind of when the cat's away, the mice will play-ish.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the really interesting aspects about Steve is the fact that he's so involved in this underground punk DIY scene. As in, he and his roommates turn their basement into an independent, fully functioning music venue for local and out-of-state bands. And we're not just talking a few college friends. This can be crowds into the hundreds in a basement. It's perhaps surprising coming from this clean-cut chemist in the lab who's doing a great job within company regulations. I mean, he likes the company where he is, don't get me wrong. One reason for that is because everybody there is pretty close. He said he felt like he needed to hide his tattoos and piercings back when he first started, and didn't want people to know that he was a musician, especially in the DIY scene.
And so now, you know, people know that I play music, and I have tattoos, and I have my nose pierced, even if I don't show it at work. So it is kind of a very friendly, familiar attitude in the lab.
Hmm. Sounds like Steve from New Jersey is able to be a little bit more himself, which is the same thing that he and so many others have found in the DIY community.
Yeah, and that is what is most important to us. It's we never want anybody who comes into our house to feel threatened or unsafe. We want you to feel, no matter what your upbringing is, no matter what your current life situation is, we want you to feel like there is a safe space here. There's a place for you to interact. You can come here and make friends and not have to worry about putting on a false front for other people.
And while Steve helps run a single basement venue, this is actually a larger network that's much bigger than just his neighborhood.
And honestly, the DIY scene, it's this network throughout the whole country of like-minded people, normally, you know, younger, I guess, in the millennial generation, who are all dedicated to creating a safe environment and a space for people to share their art. And that's really what it's all about.
Maybe I've seen too many movies, but how do you ensure that the people that are coming in have the right intentions and aren't just undercover trying to figure out how it works? Is that ever a worry that you have?
It's honestly, it's a constant worry for us, especially because these aren't just spaces that we're throwing shows at. These are our homes. A lot of people, I think, even when they come to shows, they don't realize we live here. You know, the next day we have to deal with the aftermath from an event that we've thrown at the house. We have to clean, you know, make sure nothing was broken. So, you know, it is our home. And at the end of the day, I guess the integrity of our house is what's most important. But we get around that by every house has a code name. Nobody advertises by their address. So a lot of these shows are word of mouth. And honestly, I think my one grievance is that in order to get involved and get to these shows, you have to know somebody already. And you need to know who to ask. And like, I can't tell you how many times I've had a random person I've never met send me an email or a message asking what the address is for the show. And then I have to I feel creepy, but I have to stalk them on social media to see if they're a fake.
Figure out, who are you?
Yeah, who are you? Who do you know? But we try and vet people who we don't know, just for the safety of the house and the safety of the people in the scene who have been established and been here and have contributed to the scene, because nobody wants their house to get shut down. At that point, not only do you lose a space where everybody can feel safe and included, you also can lose your home. You can be evicted.
One clear distinction to make is that Steve is not just in the world of DIY and music. He's a DIY venue operator with some of his friends, and that means that he has a certain degree of responsibility.
What a lot of people might not realize is the people who run the shows, when we're there, we're responsible. We're patrolling the house the entire time. We're making sure everybody's safe. We make sure that there's always fire extinguishers in the basement. We make sure everyone knows where the exit is. You know, so we try and keep people safe, and then we keep an eye on activity of the people in the house. And so if there's somebody who's behaving in a manner that's making other people feel uncomfortable, they will be told to leave.
Steve talked earlier about wanting to create an emotionally safe space for eventgoers to be themselves outside of the pay-to-play type venues. But there's another side to safety, and that's physical safety, especially in light of the early December 2016 incident known as the Ghost Ship Fire. That situation is different than Steve's story, and I want to stress that my guest today makes no claims about being a spokesperson for DIY communities or even his own house. This is his personal story.
You mentioned some of the negative press out there about the DIY community recently.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who organizes events, does that change how you feel about what you do or the sense of responsibility?
I would say specifically after the Ghost Ship Fire, it really, I think, caused me to wake up a little bit, and I would say even become a little more mature, even to the point where the day after the fire, I texted everybody who runs a show house in our city and told them that I was driving to Lowe's to pick up fire extinguishers, because every house should have two in the basement. So I sent messages out and asked people, you know, let me know if they need a fire extinguisher, because I was going to pick those up.
All this negative press also inspired Steve and his venue mates to turn their house into more than just an accepting place to appreciate music. It's now embracing social activism.
We do fundraising shows now. We have a little activism corner with contact information and flyers and volunteering opportunities. So anybody who comes and just peeks at it, if they see some kind of cause that they're passionate about, they can sign up, and then we organize volunteering days for different nonprofits through the house that people can show up here, and we'll drive everybody to the nonprofit to help.
And all that negative pressure that's in the media right now, that has helped bring about this change for you?
Yeah, with the negative press, I've tried to really keep our house safer and also to stand for something more than just the stereotypical debauchery of the DIY music scene as the majority of people may perceive it.
And what do you say, or what would you say, to the side that says, hey, this is kind of dangerous? In what way does having this venue outweigh any of that risk?
Sure. On paper, it may be a little unsafe that we have people at our house and we're running amps and a PA system through the house power sockets. But the good that the DIY scene as a whole gives people who have no other space to make themselves heard, no other place in which they feel comfortable, I truly believe that outweighs any potentially negative risk that might come with running a venue like this.
If you've ever organized a birthday party, you know that coordinating events in humans is no easy task. I mean, that's why party and wedding planners exist, right? So how does this planning work for Steve?
You mentioned that you have speakers come in, you book musical talent. How does that work when you have to be so secretive?
A lot of times it'll get off the ground with a musical act sending me an email or a message saying, hey, I am this band, I'm on tour from wherever I may be from. And normally they come with a referral. So somebody from the scene will have given my name or the name of another person who runs shows. And so they'll send me a message. And then if we can accommodate them, we will try and build a show with local bands supporting this touring band. That'll be a cohesive bill.
And then, but then it's time to get the word out there without getting it too much out there.
Pretty much. So the scene for the city in which we live has been around since probably at least the late 70s, early 80s. So there is this very long established tradition here and predates social media. But when everybody made the move to being active on social media, the community moved there as well. So at this point, if I'm organizing a show and I have a bill put together, I'll just go to the other events on social media I've hosted and invite everybody from those events so the word gets out and the bands promote themselves. And so fans of that band who may not be familiar with our house or I may not know personally will also be made aware of the show. So obviously it's not promotion to the point that we're running ads with the address and saying, look, this band here on the Tonight. But the word does get out. And so we've had shows here with over 200 people in our house.
Oh, that is surprising.
Like crammed into a sweaty basement on a Saturday night.
That is a lot of people.
With that many house guests, you have to start wondering what the neighbors are thinking. There's a difference between sound treating and making something soundproof, so you can still hear the music outside to some degree. Steve says they actually went around their community letting neighbors know that they're going to be hosting some shows. And if they have any issues with the noise or the guests, please let them know. I like to think of it as a bunch of really polite partiers.
We've never had an issue with them. And we start our shows on time. We end them before 10 o'clock if it's a weekday, which is very rare for us. And then before 11 if it's a weekend.
See, that doesn't sound so wild and crazy. However, that's not to say there aren't any challenges to this lifestyle.
The hard thing is that if we have a show on a weekday to accommodate a touring band that I played a show in Richmond, Virginia, and a touring band that gave us a spot to sleep or helped get us a show in their city is coming through on a weekday, you know, there's definitely this feeling of reciprocity and you can't turn them down. So there have been instances where I've thrown a show on a Tuesday and then have, you know, wake up at 5:30, 6 o'clock for work the next day. And that's when it gets rough.
But is it worth it?
Oh, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And even though my day job, the merit to the job is that I'm fortunate enough that I was employed full-time out of college, unlike a lot of people in my age bracket. And it lets me pay the bills and gives me a little bit of extra money that I can put back into the house and put back into special programming. Like, especially since November, my house has started an initiative where every event we hold, 50% of the door automatically goes to a nonprofit that helps marginalized people in our community. So
this is part of the celebration of local groups and the push to get involved in the community in a positive way. Steve went on to tell me about the benefit his house did just last week. Both the local nonprofit and the band were supported financially, and I was surprised to learn that the venue didn't actually make any money.
We don't keep anything from this.
So all the money goes to the nonprofit and to the band?
Absolutely. Both walked away with like $350, which, you know, may not seem like a lot when there's a bunch of people who like are just out of college or still in college trying to make ends meet. For us, that's a huge amount of money. And if you can give $300 to a local nonprofit and also give bands enough money to pay for gas for the rest of the tour, that's, in my mind, that's a good night.
Okay, so there's a few things that I want to make sure that I stress here. One, it's easy to look at Steve as a chemist who's really a DIY guy just living for the weekend. But his two roles actually depend on one another and help make each one satisfying. Chemistry is financial stability that allows him to be the DIY guy, and the DIY aspect gives him a reason to embrace the chemist and not fight it. I love how open Steve is about his passion versus responsibility, but at the end of the day, make no mistake, he's not complaining about chemistry.
I'm forever grateful to my employers for the very rare financial security my job has granted me and has allowed me to pursue being an active member of the DIY community, and especially being able to open up a space. And that's something I've wanted to do since I was exposed to this.
Another takeaway is how much of a group effort the whole house venue thing is. It's about lifting each other up, not trying to shine the brightest.
There are 7 people who live in my house, and we all together make it work. And that's important for people to know, that it is really a huge collaborative effort.
And the last takeaway is this. Think what you want about the DIY scene, but for Steve from New Jersey, it saved his life.
I don't want to speak for everybody else involved in the scene, but you know, I suffer from your gamut of mental issues, and I was in a really, really bad place, especially when I graduated college, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I stumbled my way into a job that I maybe wasn't ecstatic about. And then a friend of mine who's played in a band, and I went to high school with him, I knew him. He just texted me when I got home after I graduated, and he was like, hey, come to a show. And I'd never seen something like this before, ever in my life. And it was instantly, I felt welcomed. I met people that night that I still talk to and hang out with multiple times a week. And that was 4 years ago. And it's just these people, it's really just the most accepting, inclusive environment that I've ever been exposed to in my entire life. And it's also, every day is a learning experience. And I would say, because of the DIY scene, I've become more conscious about my privileges granted to me in the social structure. You know, I didn't even know about what inherent racism really was until I started hanging around here, and people would, you know, call people out for saying things that were hurtful. And it's never malicious. It's never with the intent to make somebody feel bad or stupid about themselves. But we really do try and educate people so that they can behave in a way that they never make anyone else feel threatened. And we've definitely tried to embody that in our house, where people who have come to a show or an event at our house know that this is a space where you can feel safe. This is a space where nobody will call you out for being of a different ethnicity. No one will make fun of you for the way you dress or who you decide to date or anything like that. And it has made me truly a better person.
Special thanks to Steve from New Jersey for sharing his story with the world. For more info on anyone on the podcast or to be considered for the show, head on over to careerdayshow.com. I'd also love to hear from you on Twitter at Carissa Weiser or on Facebook at Career Day Show. If you like the podcast, the best thing you can do is leave a good review on iTunes. This is a great way to help other people find the show. Thanks to everyone who's left a review so far, including Frozenbeard, Big Flower, Duty Kazoo, Alorfin Thend, The Jaw One, Mama Babizi, Wadfam 2000, Sisamom, Dynamic Cow King, Slinky Buzz, Mars 1984, and 3 Thumbs Up Emoticons, period. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Career Day.